This is the Social Geek Radio Network. Geeks, and welcome to the Social Geek Podcast. I'm Jack Munson, your host and marketing consigliere. Today, quit or commit. Some work challenges are opportunities. Some are red flags. How do you tell the difference? Today's rockstar panel, Derek Abelman, Ali Krauss, Scott Greenberg, and Liz Solar. Today's episode is brought to you by Answer Connect, Northeast Color, Citroen Cooperman, and the panel is next after a word from Hughes. Cybersecurity is the biggest risk to your business. Cybercriminals can steal your data, steal your money, and even impact your ability to stay open. Protect your business with Hughes Managed Cybersecurity. The Hughes suite of cybersecurity services protects, detects, and responds to cyber threats so you can focus on running your business. Reach out to find out how Hughes can become your cybersecurity partner. Visit Hughes.com/franchise. Stars are back joining us today. Derek Abelman of Northeast Color. Hey, brother, how are you?
I'm well. Happy spring, Jack.
Good to feel the warmth. Well, maybe someday soon. Ali Krauss, how are you today? VP of Marketing for Better Trends.
I always think I'm going to have something witty to say at this point, Jack, and I never do. So I need.
You know, it's the biggest problem with intros on podcasts, right? Like you know, how about this? Here's my new intro for you. She's the Taylor Swift of franchising. It's Ali Krauss.
I don't know. I don't know if I even want that with what's going on with Taylor in the media these days. Conspiracy theories and...
I don't know. We could do worse. So, all right. Now I've got to come back with a good intro for Scott Greenberg. He knows this will go down on his permanent record. Oh, yeah. It's Scott Greenberg, best-selling author. What's going on, Scott?
Not much. I'm not even going to try to say something clever. I'm just going to bat my eyelashes at you.
It works every time, big boy. And also from Solar Media, it's Liz Solar. It's been a hot minute, Liz.
It sure has. And I would bat my eyelashes at you, but Scott took my move. So we're done here.
It feels like, and tell me if you're seeing something different, but it feels like this is just this crazy, uncertain economy right now. And half of the people I know are either looking for a new job, just got a new job, or are planning on leaving their current job. It just feels like it's a rocky road out there for all of our employed friends. And I wanted to chat with all of you about, like, what exactly are the challenges in the franchise space and maybe outside of the franchise space as well? What are the challenges and maybe opportunities that people are seeing in this industry right now? Does anyone have a place to start?
This has nothing to do with franchises, but I do know people who are in the cognition phase. They might be working at a place for 4 or 5 years, and depending on the type of industry and where that industry is going, people are thinking, well, I have skills that are certainly translatable to another industry, or maybe I can start my own thing. So I'm seeing a little bit of that. And what I'm seeing with young parents is, I've been working at this for a while, burnt out, and maybe some of that is pandemic related, and saying, you know what, I might just cut down on some of these hours and really get, you know, embrace the work-life balance. And I enjoy my children, so I'm going to spend a little bit more time with them. So those are the two things I see going on.
Yeah, I think that translates across many industries. I think specifically in franchising, some of us see that as, hey, maybe this is an opportunity for someone to start their own business, right? Ali, are you seeing an increase in some of those people coming to Benetrends to talk about maybe getting away from this job that is just killing them for one reason or another? Is that a lot of the conversations you guys are seeing?
I mean, I haven't so much much seen people just leaving jobs that are killing them, but I think what I have heard more often from friends and LinkedIn messages and from hearing people at conferences that I've been at in 2024 so far is that people are keeping their options open. So it's almost like this unease that people have where it's like I had a friend this morning that told me, there's been layoffs. Like, what should I do? Like, it's a bad day. I haven't been, I've lost friends. And so it's like, keep your options open. Like if you're safe and you're comfortable and you like your job, like all of that's great. But I think saying yes to interviews is always something that you hear people talking about just being good for professional development and staying fresh and interviewing. Cause interviewing can be really intimidating and a really long, lengthy process, depending on the job that you're applying for. So I think that flexibility of just knowing like, maybe this won't be long-term. And if it's not, what can I put out on a platter that is safe? And what connections am I building that allows me to find the next thing? If it's not today, it could be tomorrow. So I think just this kind of unease is what I'm feeling from friends and colleagues.
You know, I would have to say that I hear what both, you know, Allie and Liz are saying. And to me, just as someone who works in marketing, I feel like everything comes back to storytelling for me at some level. And I feel like post-COVID, people started reflecting deeper on what they were doing with their time, with their lives, work-life balance. Like, does my job, how does that fit into my personality? How does that fit into the story of me? And so I think when you talk about keeping your options open, not maybe ready to commit, not ready maybe to quit. And I think interpreting your experience with your boss or with a work sort of, be it toxic or really healthy environment, how does this reflect me? Like, I think we're entering this phase where all of the personal branding that we developed as a society through social media is now really like entering another phase where everything now is a part of my brand, right? And am I the type of person who has this type of job? Am I the type of person who has this type of job? And if I do, how long do I work this? Like, when do I stop? Am I this type of dad? Am I this type of partner? Right. And so I think a lot of it has to do with jobs now need to fit someone's identity and their story about themselves in a way that before it was always about the economic implications. Right.
I think, too, that there was a time in the workplace where loyalty was a huge value, but loyalty was expected just based on the fact that you have a job. You have a job, therefore, you must be loyal to the company. And I think now that is no longer the case. And I think that's good. I think no one's entitled to anything. Everyone should be held accountable. I think loyalty should have to be earned. And generally, that's the feeling in the workplace. And so employees have no reason to stick around if they're not feeling it. And certainly in the franchise industry, where there's constant change at the leadership or management level, all this consolidation, I think people feel less secure in their jobs. And so they may as well keep their eyes open. I know a number of people right now who have jobs who are looking, who want to leave because they think that, you know, they're not having the quality of life they want, or they don't feel the stability that they want. And so it goes both ways. I think companies need to, you know, step up to earn the loyalty. And then, you know, employees need to, you know, be grateful if their companies really are looking out for them. But anything that encourages people to have to step up and be better at what they do is something that I support, even if that means having to be better to each other so people want to hang in there. I think that's important.
Scott, what you were saying about loyalty, I was watching a clip recently from the greatest TV show ever, Mad Men. And it was Don Draper talking to his secretary who was all upset. And she said, you never say thank you for anything I do for you. And he said, I say thank you every 2 weeks when you get a paycheck. Right. And I think that kind of exemplifies the type of loyalty that some employers may see versus, you know, the gratitude that this young employee was actually looking for. She probably didn't need the paycheck on some days as much as she needed the confidence and the gratitude that she wanted from her boss. So why is this different now than, let's say, I don't know, 20 years ago, maybe further back? It feels like back in the good old days of the 90s, loyalty was something that you you were kind of afraid to not look loyal, right? If something was terrible, if you worked for a really toxic place or person, you stuck with it at least for a year, because the last thing you wanted anyone to think was that you were going to leave a job before a year, maybe 2 years, right? Liz, you and I were both in radio at the time, and we didn't really have to make those decisions. Those decisions were usually made for us.
The bastion of stability. Yeah.
Back to what Derek was saying about jobs being your identity. That's what broadcasting was all about. Like, you were what logo, format, type of station you worked for. That was your identity to the rest of the industry.
However, there are some similarities that I think were, you know, among many industries, and even broadcasting was included. One job that I had matching 401k, I had pre-tax childcare and additional medical expenses. I had dental. They paid for our parking, you know, and it was, and like the boss was just, you know, it depends on who is in charge.
And
this was a guy who was, had several different businesses. One was an NBA team. So he had diversified, but also he was a real human being who was trying to do the best he could for people. When he sold it, the people who came in, the first thing they said is, you can keep your job, but you're going to have to take 30% less.
Yeah. And no more parking spaces for you, right?
Absolutely not. But I think that, that there was a tide change in, or a sea change in how some industries did business. And I think you do not gain an employee's loyalty by taking things away from them, especially when they're fearful of what's going on economically. And I can't remember any time in my adult life where somebody wasn't afraid of being laid off or something bad in the economy. Even we can look at the stock market now. It's fabulous. There are some sectors that are great, and yet some people are struggling and are feeling economic pain. So that is, that's a constant.
Yeah, it feels like, and this is a big generalization, it feels like the younger workers today, let's say 25 to 30 years old, it feels like they're way smarter than I was when I was that age, because I was terrified about losing a job. I would work for some horrible human being just because, you know, I didn't want to leave the job, and I identified with that place so much that I didn't want to lose the job. And now looking back, there are so many points in my life where I wish I could go back in time and say, you can do better. You get out of here. But it feels like many more people of that age group now know that. And maybe they've gotten better advice. And maybe they're just smarter about what they want to do with their lives. Does anyone else see that?
I think absolutely. I think they've watched us older people who not only tolerated that, but are proud of what we endured and how much, you know, we suffered. And so they've watched our lifestyles, losing our hair and heart attacks and all these things. And they're thinking, I don't need that.
Yeah.
You know, so they place much more value on quality of life and life balance and healthy work environments. Those are their priorities compared to just how much they're getting paid. And, you know, what are they going to get from the job? For them, it's how they feel. Just like the way customers will choose they're going to do business with. It's the business that makes them feel the best, not just the one that gives them value, but who elevates their emotions. And I think that younger generations are more emotionally in tune. There's more empathy. Some might say that they're more thin-skinned, whatever you want to call it when you're judging, but feeling good is a priority for them. And so, you know, we can brag about what we went through, but I don't think any of us would say, boy, those are great days. I was always happy. Quite the opposite. We just were willing to endure it. They're not. And so that affects, you know, their willingness to stick around or willingness to even take a job in the first place.
Are you seeing a lot of that with the hourly workers and the small business owners who employ those hourly workers, especially with all the research you did for Stop the Shift Show, which is available now on Amazon.com, by the way? Are you seeing that in the research you did for the book? Are more younger workers thinking that way, or has that kind of been steady over the years?
Absolutely. You know, all these people, they lost their whatever part-time jobs and things they had at the beginning of the pandemic. And at the end, they're all invited back, right? And they didn't come running back because, first of all, they have other options, right? They can have quality of life driving Uber or DoorDash or other things, right? And still make some good money. More and more, You know, hourly workers especially, it's like, well, because I have a lot of different options, I'm not just going to go to the place that pays the best. I'm going to go to the place that feels the best. You know, people might take a job because it pays the most, but that's not why they stay. They stay because of how it makes them feel. So I think with hourly workers in particular, there's a burden and responsibility for managers, employers to go out of your way, not just to give your employees a lot, but to treat them really well, because that's the secret to retention and motivation.
Back in a moment after this word from Northeast Color. Northeast Color produces branded interior decor and custom signage solutions for the franchise industry, with a special focus on value engineering. They work with franchisors to re-engineer their existing signage packages to lower costs on materials, shipping, and installation, all while maintaining the integrity of their client's brand. In short, Northeast Color literally makes things better. Learn more now at northeastcolor.com. How can you unlock millions in annual revenue? Don't miss out on 30% of your phone calls. At Answer Connect, they've got the solution for franchisors, franchisees, suppliers, and brokers. If you can't answer your calls, Answer Connect can. Reclaim your revenue today. If you think this would help, call my good friend Karen Booz at 888-822-2034. That's 888-822-2034.
Another topic that we haven't touched on yet is how other countries are also kind of a little bit of a step ahead of the U.S. in the way that they're treating their workers and compensation. And one of the big topics in the news is the bill that Bernie Sanders is suggesting for a 4-day work week. And I recently read that there are currently 20 countries across the globe that are already on a 4-day work week, or at least trying it for a certain amount of time. And I think it's interesting because I think with the younger generation that is open to change and willing to change and also more vocal about it, is this younger generation actually feels like they can contribute to change, whether it be politically or at their job. And so when I think you people in this generation see opportunity ahead, like a 4-day work week, are you, if we decide to do that, if even a state does that, what's that going to do for our country? How's it going to change? And I even think about it at my age of, am I currently at an employer who will quickly adopt to change if and when change is inevitable to come? I wouldn't have known to think, is my employer ready for the pandemic? Is my job secure if a pandemic were to hit? But I think because everyone lived through that, even regardless of your age, we're almost a little more emotionally attached to what will happen to me personally and what will happen to my company personally when change comes. And I think it's really important to acknowledge that we're looking at some pretty big conversations in government about what the workday looks like.
That's so important, Allie, because, you know, these things, you know, the idea of 40 hours a week, 8 hours a day, you know, five shifts a week, these are all constructs. There's no law of physics.
Yeah. Thank you, Henry Ford, for all of those numbers, right? 100 years ago.
Especially because we have these tools that increase productivity, that kind of thing, that maybe 4 days a week, you know, especially if we're working remotely or that kind of thing, that we can get just as much done, but have a little bit more life balance.
Yeah,
I think it's worth looking to, and not just saying, well, it's, you know, not how things used to be. That doesn't mean a damn thing. Right. So I think it's worth at least experimenting with.
Yeah.
A great model is the 18-hour work week. And that's something in the 90s as a young mom I encountered, and I would work with people who had 40-hour work weeks, and they'd just like be hanging out, having coffee, doing their conversation. And it, not just me, I think it's true of anybody who works limited hours. To the grindstone, there was not a moment to waste. I got it done. Mm-hmm. And I think there's something to be said about, we get things done in the time that we are allotted. There are some people in 40 hours that get very little done. And there are people who are really, their work ethic will not allow them to waste that time because somebody is paying them. Somebody is valuing them for what they bring to that job, to that task. So I think it really has to do with, like, how are we What's our attitude about work and how are we training people? And that's, that's both systemic and that's on a case-by-case basis. How is your leader treating work and how are they conveying the value that you bring to their mission?
I was just thinking about leaders and like lessons you can learn from them, and reminded me of like kind of this job that I had when I was in my 20s, when I was in college. I don't even think I was in my 20s yet, very early. But it may surprise no one to learn that I used to work at an art house cinema, and so I worked at this like very hoity-toity art house cinema, and I'd occasionally have to fill in on the weekday matinee shifts, which were staffed by local retirees. So there would be like one college kid, and then everyone else would be much older. And these shifts were like usually considered cakewalks because, who's lined up at 11 a.m. on a Tuesday to watch a French couple work through a, bitter and subtitled divorce? Like, it's just not a big shift, right? So it's supposed to be easy,
Not a
but
lot of popcorn to make for that one, right?
that's what I thought. I was like, yeah, Tuesday, I'm gonna come in and just read my book and do some homework and kind of like maybe I'll hooky up some popcorn. But no. The lead retiree that I met that day was this like was super fired up, and he had this somewhat antagonistic approach to pushing his team to get everything ship shape at this cadence that like suggested that we were about to be overwhelmed by enemy forces. Just like a real like driver dude. And for whatever reason, I decided that this guy had something to teach me. For whatever reason, I don't know why, but I decided that I was going to participate in this guy's definition of the job. And I embraced his intensity wholeheartedly. Like, I kept his pace. I concentrated all my attention on achieving his idea of excellence just for its own sake. And I ultimately gained this dude's respect. And shortly thereafter, I was promoted to chief of staff, which at a movie theater that just showed foreign films or whatever. So it's like, I was king of a very tiny island. But, objectively, the stakes were low, but I learned this valuable lesson about bringing your whole self to your work and committing to something with a sincerity that is indifferent to certain types of context or rationalization. And so, again, low-level job, kind of a cranky guy, not fun to be around, but he taught me something. And I feel that experience that I had very early in my 20s really set me up for the rest of my career. And so I feel like when I work for an employer or I work a job, I'm asking, what can I learn from this? This is a window into me learning more about myself somehow, and I'm going to contribute to your success, but somehow there is something I need to learn, and you may not know that you're teaching it to me.
I love how Derek was anticipating having his free time at work and he's going to fill it reading a book
Right.
while at a movie theater.
Yeah. I mean, there's a lot of downtime. They're like 3 hour long, these movies, these
He's
French movies.
in the cinema with a flashlight and the book, right?
Yeah.
He literally can, grab as much popcorn as he wants and watch a movie, but no, he's going to read a book.
Now we're going to read a book.
I had homework, man.
Yeah, there was always that job, around college where, I wonder how much homework I can get while I'm on the clock, right? Like, how can I work that? So, that kind of goes back to Allie, what you were saying about the 4-day work week and the time shift and everything. It feels like that 40 number someday is just going to disappear. I mean,
Hope it
like I
does.
said, it's just a number Henry Ford came up with. And there are probably some people on this podcast right now who are thinking, you only work 40 hours? Are you kidding? I work 80, right? But I think that's the direction we could go, is stop with the numbers and the number of hours and which days you work. To me, it's all about output. What is an employee or a team member, what value are they giving? What value that actually, impacts the bottom line? What value are they giving? And if someone's valuable, even on my team, I don't care if they work 40 hours. I don't care if they work every Friday or not. If they're getting the work done and growing our company in the way we need it to grow, I don't care. You know, are we taking President's Day off this year? Sure, you take it off. If you get everything done to grow your part of the business, take every Monday off. It doesn't matter to me, because I think which hours we work, especially now that, you know, and I'm sure like most of you, I work with people who are on multiple time zones and maybe even across multiple countries. Does it matter that you're at a desk at 9 a.m. Eastern Standard Time? Right? No, it what matters is you're taking care of the stuff you need to take care of. I know for a lot of our clients, and Scott, for probably a lot of the people you spoke to for your book, that's a little bit of a different thing, because, you know, we are talking about a shift. You know, you're at the restaurant from 11 a.m. till 6 p.m. or whatever the need is. So a little bit of a gap there, a little bit of a divide between, you know, people who are working in marketing agencies and people who are working inside a restaurant, as far as what does time actually look like and the amount of work that gets done every day.
Yeah. I mean, if you're running a movie theater, right, you need people who are there selling popcorn during that midday shift. Like those things need to be covered. So scheduling is important. But if you look at the history of work, certainly in the United States, for the vast majority of history, people were not getting paid for their time. You know, that the time clocks didn't come around to like the Industrial Revolution, that, you know, people are usually paid by the piece, right? If they're manufacturing, if they're picking fruit, that kind of thing, based on productivity, right? So that changed. But again, it's a construct. And I think it's worth looking differently at workers and the idea of how people should be compensated. And I think that we should at least question the concept of full-time, part-time, and, you know, people can fill a lot of time and not be productive.
Yeah, that's the other part of the 40-hour week, you know, comparing it with Liz's 18-hour week at one point of her life. Liz, I'm guessing you got a lot more done in that 18 hours than many people I know who could get it done in 40 hours, right?
Oh, yeah. I mean, I went to parochial school. So, yeah, you're getting that
good
done.
Good training.
Or it's going to be big time out. One thing, you know, that you've been talking about and I've really been considering is, so what is the value if we don't use by the piece, by the hour, and somebody brings incredible value to their organization? And some of it might be measurable. Some of it may not be. I mean, it's going to be measurable in some way eventually, but how do we compensate the contribution of somebody, whether it's a 40-hour week or 18-hour week, if they go above and beyond? And what do we do to the person who is not performing, no matter how many hours they're given? Do we now sort of rejigger a compensation system for them?
That's interesting, because I think, Liz, that part of the evaluation there seems to be commitment. What is your level of engagement, right? Like, so if someone is just for 40 hours quiet quitting or is there in body but not in spirit, is contributing up to just exactly what they're supposed to do and not a scotch beyond, right? Like, versus someone who, depending on whatever their role is able to pull something together that is the right thing somehow. It's difficult. I mean, again, in marketing, we have KPIs and so forth, but I would argue that like the essence of what we do in marketing there is an ephemeral quality to it. We're like, how are you going to quantify? You can clicks and you can do things like that, but there is something else to it. And that has to come from a place of really being engaged and really caring. So like, yeah, I think some of it has to do with that. Who's quiet quitting? Who's really, really there? And what does above and beyond mean?
Yeah. And I bring it up because in our business, Jack, in voiceover, there, you know, there are some, because there is a guild, there's SAG-AFTRA, which says, you know, the minimum for this. And then some people will make, particularly celebrities, make multi-million dollars doing an ad campaign. But somebody has brought up the idea in a few places where, why should we pay somebody that much for something that's been untested? Shouldn't we be paying people for the results? So you can come up with an idea, and the idea is the idea, and that's a fabulous thing. I'm all about it. But what are the results? Does it, you know, someone said it's not creative if it doesn't sell. So how do we start to compensate? I know I'm opening up a can of worms here, but it's something to consider as we go forward, especially in this technological society that we have. What ideas are worth it and which ones aren't?
I'm seeing more and more of that, specifically in franchise development with you know, some sales organizations and things like that, where it's, well, we'll pay you based on how many units we sell. And it's, that's okay to me if I'm the sales guy. But if I'm the marketing guy who's just generating the leads, no thank you to that business model, because I have no control over how good your sales guy is, right? I'm seeing that more and more and more. And I think it's a way for some organizations to get away from having to pay, you know, some big retainer, but they're going to pay you more if they end up selling more of what you're helping them produce. And yeah, I'm not a big fan of that. I don't know how that's really going to grow, except if you're talking about marketing and operations people who are kind of desperate for more work, so they're going to try new business models like this. I don't see that being sustainable, but I could be wrong.
I want to just touch on something that Liz was saying earlier, that, you know, there is some work that is easily quantified, right? If you're working on an assembly line or something like that, but there's some work that it's more abstract. You know, people are contributing ideas or management, that kind of thing. And, you know, the idea of a salary that was developed specifically for those kinds of people who, it's not about how much time, it's not about, any kind of quantifiable thing. It's more abstraction. And so, you know, it's there. I do think in some cases that, you know, salaries can be an incentive, which is why piecework makes sense. But the idea of, well, I'm just paying for your time. Like, again, if someone is just killing time, right, they're not really being productive. It's, you know, I'm just not sure that time is a great compensation model. I don't always know what the alternative is. But I think what's important, and I think maybe this is what Ali was saying earlier, is just that we'd be opening to questioning it all, that none of these things are set in stone, that these are constructs. And I think that those businesses, especially these days where young people, they think so differently. I think those businesses are willing to deviate from what's been protocol for the last century and explore different approaches that allow for life balance, but still encourage productivity. Those businesses are going to really do great with their workforce.
Yeah, I don't know what the workforce is going to look like 5 years from now, but I do know that it won't look like what it is today.
When I was thinking about this topic earlier, I found myself reflecting on some of like the harder jobs that I've had, some of the really terrible experiences that I've had in over the course of my working life. And the quit or commit to me is a question of like, have I learned enough from this experience? Is it time to go, right? Has this run its course? And while I would never recommend staying in a toxic or abusive work environment, something that doesn't serve you, I can say that personally, you know, certain types of pressure can be privileges, right? That there can, with a slight amount of antagonism, a good thing can come out of you. You can learn about yourself. You can learn what you will or will not tolerate, what you will or will not go with. And I think that sort of challenge can be very eye-opening. I mean, the trick for me is to separate the person from the situation and to recognize that, you know, I'm not in this, whatever this job is, to please someone else. Personally, I'm here to learn something about myself. And so in that way, like holding your hand over a burning candle to increase your pain threshold doesn't impress the candle, right? The candle is just a prop. It's an open channel into a kind of intensity that can both illuminate and burn you, often simultaneously. So you get to choose when you pull your hand away, when you've learned enough to carry that flame for yourself and on your own terms.
Before we go, a quick word from Citrin Cooperman. Citrin Cooperman is proud to be the home of one of the leading franchising practices in the country, With over 40 years of franchise experience, Citrin Cooperman provides a full range of services to a vast number of franchise concepts. They work with the owners, operators, controllers, and CFOs of a wide range of franchisors and multi-unit franchisees to help them establish their brands and grow their businesses to the next level. The Citrin Cooperman Franchise Practice is comprised of experienced CFE-accredited professionals, providing franchisors and multi-unit franchisees the guidance and insight they need to minimize uncertainty, meet compliance and contractual obligations, and stay focused on building their businesses. For more information, please contact Aaron Chytovsky and Michael Iannuzzi at citrincooperman.com. Thanks once again to today's rock star panel, Derek Abelman of Northeast Color, Ali Krause of Benetrends, author and keynote speaker Scott Greenberg, and Solar Media's Liz Solar. And thank you for listening and staying connected on the Social Geek Radio Network.